Hello there and good morning. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. This is Turning Towards Life, and we want to warmly welcome you here into this space with us. Every Sunday morning, we gather ourselves together from whatever Saturday night we've had, and we bring ourselves to our computers and enter into this conversation that is live and unrehearsed, and which always has some kind of what we call a source at its beginning and threaded through the whole conversation to begin ourselves into some kind of inquiry that means something to us. So each week is an alternate source. So Justin chooses one week and I choose the other week. And we've been doing this now for a very long time, over 200 and something times. And so if you are new with us here, we want to welcome you into the routine of this and say thank you for joining us. We have a really wonderful source today by Charles Davies. Maybe you say Davis, I don't know. Sometimes you pronounce that surname differently. So maybe if Charles, you're listening, you could let us know how to say your surname. And just to say, Charles, thank you for allowing us to be in this conversation with you by this source being part of this conversation. And Justin, thank you for finding Charles, being guided to Charles, learning about Charles so that we could bring this here. And Justin, I just want to thank you also for the range of sources that you have. It's so beautiful. I learned so much, and I feel like my resources get stretched into all kinds of different places because of the way that you explore the world like this. So thank you.
Thanks, Lizzie. Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, good evening. Who knows what time of day and in what year you might be listening to this, because you might be on our podcast or website or YouTube or Instagram or something like that as well. One of the things that really struck me, Lizzie, before we get into the source, that when you were just introducing this, is that this practice of being in conversation, you and me, and the third something in the middle, which is the starts off being someone else's words and then, of course, becomes the field of everything between us. It's not just a conversation between us, it's also a model of a way of being in conversation and a way of being with other people that's really deeply rooted in third space. And I'm thinking about that now, partly because we're at this time of year where we're starting to open up applications to our year-long coaching program, which, when you and I began this, we began this very much in mind that this mode of being receptive, sensitive to one another, and sensitive and receptive to the something that's on the in-between, whether it's a word or an idea or a feeling or the world itself, is the same thing that's happening in coaching. And it feels so good to be able to practice it with you this week, this way, every week, but also to make it available to other people, because I know also that lots of people who are with us, because they listen or join us live, have this sense that they're participating in the something in between that's going on. So welcome everybody to the something in between. And you can find the source always in our Facebook group, Turning Towards Life. You're really welcome to come and join us there. And you get to be with us live if you want on a Sunday morning UK time. And it's also will be posted in, if you're on a podcast or YouTube or any of those places, you'll find the source and also the link to Charles and his work there. And this is from Charles's website. And the reason I brought this is somebody I know sent this way to me, and it's this first line that really spoke to me so powerfully. And here's the source. The professionalism that requires us to be unmoved by what we meet through the day is a professionalism that will kill us all. About 15 years ago, I started regularly going to Denmark to teach at the Chaos Pilots, a school of creative and social entrepreneurship. What I loved about the school was that rather than teaching people to be business people, they asked, "What do you need to learn to live and work well in an unpredictable world?" And so the students learned how to listen to each other and how to listen to themselves and how to see what is happening and see what is needed and feel able to respond. how to stand for something. They were learning how to be sensitive, how to be sensitive at work. The insensitivity required to be part of the system is unsustainable. Without sensitivity to life as a whole, everything starts to die. So, how can we do the work we need to do in a way that increases rather than blocks our sensitivity? What does professionalism look like when it is something you feel your way through moment by moment, when it requires vulnerability and uncertainty, when being more professional means being more human, kinder, wiser, more generous, more forgiving, more loving? And not doing these things for their own sake, not doing these things because they're nice, but doing them because that's what works. Because if we go to work and we're on autopilot, then everything starts to die.
The professionalism that requires us to be unmoved by what we meet through the day is a professionalism that will kill us all. About 15 years ago, I started regularly going to Denmark to teach at the Chaos Pilots, a school of creative and social entrepreneurship. What I loved about the school was that rather than teaching people to be business people, they asked, what do you need to learn to live and work well in an unpredictable world? And so the students learned how to listen to each other and how to listen to themselves, how to see what is happening and see what is needed and feel able to respond, how to stand for something. They were learning to be sensitive, how to be sensitive at work. The insensitivity required to be part of the system is unsustainable. Without sensitivity to life as a whole, everything starts to die. So how can we do the work we need to do in a way that increases rather than blocks our sensitivity? What does professionalism look like when it's something you feel your way through moment by moment? When it requires vulnerability and uncertainty? When being more professional means being more human? Kinder, wiser, more generous, more forgiving, more loving, and not doing these things for their own sake, not doing these things because they're nice, but doing them because that's what works. Because if we go to work and we're on autopilot, then everything starts to die.
Lizzie. No, I felt this so strongly when you were reading. One of the things that brought me into this bit of writing was this uncompromising stand that sensitivity to the world, to one another, to what we feel, to our own responses, it's not a matter of what makes things nice or pleasant. Let's get really real about this, that as we teach ourselves to be insensitive, which I think is the point here, that there are whole domains of human life where we have got into teaching ourselves the opposite of this, which is teaching ourselves how to be insensitive, how not to feel, how to put aside our own instincts and intuitions, how to put aside what arises between us for the sake of pursuing something else. That's been the dominant mode, and that will kill us. I love that this is willing to say this, and that and to point to where it leads, because it reminds me as I was reading that our lives, how we come at our lives is not inconsequential. We're not tiny, insignificant somethings. How we relate to one another and how we relate to the very life that we're in the middle of has really profound implications for the life that everything that's around us and everyone that's around us. And so the longer we keep going, I think one of the things that allows many of us to set aside our sensitivity is we go, oh, first of all, this is what's being asked of me, so I have to do it. But the second of all is we forget how powerful we are. We forget what ripples our lives have, and we forget that moment where we treat another person as an object rather than as a living, breathing, flowing, sacred person is the moment that we contribute to the turning everything and everyone. We're playing our part and turning in everything and everyone into an object. So it really, really matters. So that's the sort of the first thing for me in this, was feeling the fierceness and of the call. And then the second thing that's really here with me when you were reading, Lizzie, is the reminder in this that to be a human and to be a living something is to be sensitive and responsive. That's what being alive is.
Mm-hmm.
We are these exquisite responding beings who are not separate from the world, who are radically open to the world, and we're able to bring together everything, what's happening inside us, what we're thinking about, what we're feeling about, the bodily sensation of things, the intuition of things, and respond in life-giving ways. That's what we're here to do. But when we've talked about this lots and lots of times, but the trouble is that we live in a culture which teaches us the other way, which teaches us, starts from a different place and says, well, really what we are is kind of machines and not very special ones, so we better get with the program and get machine like and go efficient and push ourselves and other people really, really hard and do whatever it's so become part of our background culture to be that way. So anyway, I'm grateful for anyone who's willing, as Charles has done, to write, to awaken in us, to have us remember that that's not what we are, and that our models of professionalism or education or all kinds of things are woefully deficient, but also really mesmerizing.
Mm. Oh my gosh, as usual, Justin, there's so much going on in me as I feel into your expression and Charles's expression. My goodness. So the thing that's coming really strongly for me is this whole thing about policies. And when people say, well, that's the policy. And this kind of clunking moment that I've had many times of like, but it just got written by a person. It didn't get made by a machine. It got made by a human or collection of humans. And I feel like the policy thing is an expression of this deadness for me. Like it gives just the kind of practice of policy making, which of course, you know, is really practical and needed in all kinds of ways. But the practice of having a policy for things is also like, I'm not willing to talk about it, so I'm going to write a policy so I never have to have that conversation. So my sensitivity just gets put to one side. My responding to the person gets put to one side because there's a standard response that I have to employ to bring to people. And so the practice of deadening seems to be threaded through lots of things, especially in professional circles. And it's such a breath of fresh air. And it always is a breath of fresh air because of the dominant culture that's policy driven and put yourself at the door and come to work and be the person that this place needs you to be, not you who you are. No, not who you are. The person this place needs you to be that, which is kind of dictated by the soup and the kind of small and profound signals that we get as social beings of how to behave and what to do. All of that is so powerful. And so to invite into our culture this way continually, it needs continual invitation because the dominant culture isn't this, to keep inviting us to be ourselves in places where the implicit message is, no, that's not needed here. This is a professional environment. This is professional. So let's leave that piece of you outside that responds kindly or compassionately. Let's not do that. And so I feel so grateful for any invitation that we have into this new place. And what I feel is so important though is it's really hard to be an outlier in a system where you're the only one responding. And so the only way I feel like I've really ever learned to work in this way in my professional life is to make sure that I'm with people who aren't dead in that way. Of course, they're not dead at all. They've just been taught to leave parts of themselves so to the side that there's a deadness to the way that things happen, and it feels constraining and strange, frankly. Like, hold on, you're not really being a person. What are you being? Is my experience of it. And I have to say, I've been taught by such extraordinarily sensitive, humane leaders in my life. And I really do know that, as Charles is saying, it's not just because it's nice to be this way. This is how you actually get things done. This is how you actually get brilliance. This is how you actually become a magical team. This is how you actually create things. So I feel like I'm really convinced by the "this is because it works" part. It's not a kind of fluffy thing for me. It's very normal and experienced in my life that to get things done, responsiveness is essential. It's not a luxury. It's essential to do great things, to do quality things, to have substance. This kind of responsiveness is required. It just is. So I'm really grateful, as you say, that that's what Charles is taking a stand for and saying that. It's really enlivening for me. And I think this is also an extension, Justin, of the conversations we've also had about what healthy power looks like as well. And each of us has power in every system in which we participate. And so to come at it like this and to trust ourselves that we are welcome to be ourselves and to also seek support for being ourselves feels very, very important, because we all, you know, we can enter into systems where the tidal wave is really not this. The tidal wave, the dominant culture of a place, is, you know, policy driven. This is how it's done around here. Just get the job done. Let's be efficient. The narrative of efficiency is the really only efficient. Efficiency and productivity is really the only narrative around here. And actually, all the people that I talk to who've been in organizations with that very dominant culture, there's something happening in the world right now where it's not satisfying anymore to people. It's not enough. So I think even in organizations, if we're not adopting this kind of underpinning motivation for our practices as an organization, the world is not going to have it anymore. There's something going on where people feel like really strongly that something else needs to be born. And this feels like a kind of a flag flying in that place, which is that this just feels central now to me. I don't know how to do anything unless this is what's happening. And so the fact that there are those of us writing things like this, being in the world like this, doing what Charles is doing in the world, makes me feel like we're all jumping on a good bandwagon of truthfulness of how things actually get done, how relationships get made, how brilliant things get achieved in the world. And it's enlivening. It's not like work has to be a culture where we put ourselves away and turn up in some way that isn't really us. It's actually this beautiful creative something, a little bit like what you and I are doing here, Justin, where like we're being ourselves and something's happening. That's what life, all of life can be, is a creative, interesting, enlivening, humane, considering all parts of us process. And then we haven't got this whole living for the weekend and living for our holidays thing of, oh, I can only be myself at the weekends because that's when I'm not working. Like, that makes my heart sink that that's really the thing that happens in the world for people. And actually, I think whatever we're doing, you know, whatever profession that we have, there's a way of turning up inside of it that's in this responsiveness that leaves our profession be a sustainable one rather than one that we can only do for a certain number of years and then we have to just lie on the floor because it's taken all of us. There's a way to work that's enlivening and there's a way to work that's exhausting. And I think that Charles is being an advocate for enlivening ourselves through our work rather than ending up wrung out and lying on the floor all twisted and broken.
I love it. What, among many things happening to me as you're talking, Lizzie, is this reawakening of something that's really central to this piece of writing, is the life-death distinction, the alive or dead distinction. Because in a way, I think that's probably the most powerful route into this question, is to start to ask ourselves, is the way I'm participating and what I'm participating in alive and awakening what's alive in me and those around me, or is it dead or deadening what's in us? And I feel really fierce about it this morning, because it seems to me that not just at work. I mean, Charles is writing about, I think, about clearly about professionalism, about a kind of way of thinking about work, but in very, very many aspects of our lives, the predominant culture has actually been a deadening culture, and quite deliberately, because it's taken as its model the machine model. The more efficient we can be, the more efficient we can be with our lives, the more efficient we can be with our time, the more we can turn ourselves into something that generates more, regardless of the cost, the better. That's the mark of it. And it's really hard to see, because it's become like a kind of common sense in the sense of a shared way of making sense. So we don't easily see it in ourselves. So, and this is the thing that I think Charles is writing about very specifically here, is, so there's a model of professionalism, which is that, which teaches us that if we are sensitive and allow not just our clear thinking, but our felt sense and our intuition and our sense of what's going on between us to inform what's going on, somehow that is being unprofessional. Except that's where aliveness lives, is in our openness to one another, our knowing ourselves as never separate to one another, our letting ourselves and our lives flow through one another and reach one another. So alive dead is such a great way of making the first moves of sensing into it there. But then also, when you talked about the situation that so many of us find ourselves in, where if we're lucky enough to have lives that even make this possible, that we feel like we have to deaden ourselves all week in order to be alive at the weekend. But even there, the narrative of my weekends is to do everything that's possible, and that if I haven't visited everywhere I could imagine to visit and done all the things I could imagine to do in my free time, then somehow I'm not living properly, is another version, or easily can be another version of this, because what we do is that we sacrifice our own sensitivity and responsiveness to what's right here in favor of this narrative that I was thinking about time whilst you were talking about, that time is a resource and it's a scarce resource and I have to fill it or use every drop of it as efficiently and as effectively as possible. But what if, and we've talked about this before, what if time isn't a resource like that? It's not a, you know, a line with marks on, or a bucket with, you know, indicators on, that's, but what we live right in the middle of. Yeah. Time is the flow that we're in the middle of. So I one of the things that's happening for me from this conversation is I think I'm going to, for a while, start to ask myself the simple question, alive or dead, enlivening or deadening. And what you just said about healthy power is also to recognize that there is power that we do have. So to what extent will I go along with that which deadens in me and between me and others? And to what extent will I be courageous enough to take a stand on behalf of the kind of sensitivity that's here, and express myself and invite other people to do the same? It's a really radical move in some circumstances, but also for all the reasons that we're talking about, our part in it, each of our part of it, is part of supporting the enlivening of the whole world, not just the little part of the world that we're each engaged with.
My gosh, Justin, I'm really affected by this thing about packing everything in so we don't waste time. I know it in myself, you know, let's not dwindle this special time away or something with things that aren't what we should be doing or something. But I can feel so clearly how when I do that, and or when I'm around others who are doing that as well, it feels like an attack. It feels like a kind of something powerfully implicit inside of it that's coming from lack rather than abundance. And so I can reflect on the times I've been like that. And when I look back, I can feel how kind of ravaged I've been by those days. You know, you try to pack everything in or do too many things. It's really, it really hurts on one level to be in that story that time is precious and we can't waste it. And it sounds really credible and virtuous to say that in our culture, but it's also like a wave. I experience it as kind of a torturousness as well, like a desperation of, oh God, there's something that could be wasted and I'm dwindling this life away or something, as if this moment isn't equal to that moment, isn't equal to that moment and that moment and that moment. Like everything has equal value. Because how could you value one thing, one moment more than the other? A moment is a moment is a moment. A day is a day is a day. So I'm just feeling the kind of hypnosis that happens around that. It's so easy just to think that that's true and to not question it, to not choose to do one thing instead of four things, you know. So I'm really grateful for that capacity to just reflect and see, oh my gosh, is that really what we should be doing? Is that, like, what effect does that have? Like, what impact does that have when I do that? And also, like you say, that is an underpinning narrative for so much. I think we've spoken about this before, like time is money, for example, like phrases like that. It's like, oh my God, time is money. What does that even mean? Like, I can't even really process it. It's just too big. It's too pressurizing. And of course, time isn't money at all. It's really not. They're two different things. So I just feel grateful to be in this conversation and to be in this kind of countercultural way where we can question what the soup is that we're swimming in, what these expectations are, and to be using this word professional. It's so great to kind of debunk it, to kind of go, well, what is that? But again, I'm so fiery about this not being a lonesome job. So I can imagine listening to this conversation, for example, and going, oh my goodness, well, what do I do about that? You know, I'm in an organization or I'm in a professional environment where this isn't what's going on. What do I do? How do I be enlivened by my work? How do I bring the conversation for aliveness into a place that isn't, you probably think I'm bonkers? You know, it's that, I think it's that profoundly widely accepted that to be professional has this everything starting to die quality in it. I think we can all feel it as humans, we can feel it. And I think it's probably where like burnout comes from, where you just can't carry on anymore because you've been deadened and deadened and deadened and desensitized and desensitized. And then all of a sudden you're numb. You know, I can really see that. And to be in this conversation alone doesn't feel right, because it would be too lonely and it would be another way that it would be hard. So I'm feeling really, what's the word? Like wanting to extend the community feeling to this conversation, because it's a hard one to be in when you're the only kind of outlier in the system. And yet it's probably what's going on with everyone, really. But it's hard to be in the conversation alone. So I'm feeling like it's important to make sure that we're always reaching out and open about it and speaking about it openly, so that people can see that there's a way to be in conversation, that there are human beings who are grounded and open and professional, who are living this in a different way. Like, we don't have to live it in the way that we've been told.
I love this place to land, Lizzie, that as well as everything you're saying of finding the others and talking with them, being part of a bigger conversation that's so called for, that what we're really talking about here and what this piece invites us into is nothing less than a re-understanding of what a word like professionalism means.
Yeah.
Does it mean that which turns us into machines, which is what it has meant? Efficiency and insensitivity and procedure and... Or could it mean to be professional, which really means to dedicate yourself to something? That's what professional means. It's that step we take when we say, I'm really in something. This really matters enough that I will take on an identity around it.
Mm.
Could it mean exactly what we're doing when we are coaching and teaching coaching, for example, which is a step towards being sensitive to one another, a step towards aliveness, a step towards taking care, and a step towards being responsive to the conditions of life.
Yeah.
If we were to hold that as the definition, it would still be radical, but we would feel less alone. And it's one of the places to start also is by carrying a different understanding of what that identity is with us in our minds and our hearts as we go about things.
Yeah.
Well, we've reached that moment when it's time for us to end. So, Lizzie, as always, thank you for stepping into this conversation with such grace and generosity and aliveness. It's four and something years in and two and something hundred conversations in. It's such a joy to be doing this with you. And thank you to Charles, and thank you to everyone, all of you who are with us. Just a parting reminder that if you want to speak with us and be in the conversation, the Facebook group is one place to do it, but also you can email us, Lizzie or Justin at turningtowards.life, and you can head over to turningtowards.life to find all the conversations and resources there. And we are done for this week. We'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.